Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
We talk a great deal about using plant medicines or hallucinogenics. How they're being used in microdosed levels today to help with creativity, depression, aches and pains, and just to get by. Today, I'm joined by Graham Hancock, who is introducing his new book, Visionary, and what he has experienced personally using ayahuasca, and how the ancients used ayahuasca to have vision quests, to actually move beyond the physical reality into other dimensions, to talk with entities, creatures, and spirit helpers on their journey as human beings. We're going to delve deep into the mysteries of the cocktail known as ayahuasca, how ancient cave painters may have used hallucinogens to bring out their vision quests, and why using psychedelics or plant medicines is something to consider today. All this and more on Earth Ancients. For Saturday, April 23rd, 2022, this is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. A few weeks ago, I got a call from Graham Hancock's publicist asking me if Graham could join me in an impromptu discussion of his new book, Visionary. And I said, of course, you know, we will make room for him. And I just finished listening to this book on Audible. And I got to tell you, it's a real eye-opener on a lot of different levels. The title is Visionary, The Mysterious Origins of Human Consciousness. And Graham spends a great deal of time talking about cave paintings, his personal journey with ayahuasca, DMT, and other hallucinogens, and his belief that these hallucinogens have been used for tens of thousands of years, not only by nomadic shaman in Europe and in Africa, but in all the ancient parts of the world, including Central, South America, China, everywhere. Everywhere in the world, in the ancient past, the shamans looked towards psychedelics or plant medicines to help them see what is in the future, ask questions of the guidance of the spirit world, so forth and so on. And so I said, yeah, okay, no sweat. Graham and I are friends, and let's get him on the program. I had to move things around, but he showed up real quickly. We did this, and it's funny because I just let him rip. I didn't realize, he told me before we started, that he had been on a two-week United States tour doing some conferences. He just did a conference with Randall Carlson in New Mexico, Robert Dakota's program, and then he's done some other site, he's done some other programs with some production companies. We're not going to get into that. He's got an announcement to make later in the year. He's going to be coming back to make that announcement. But I was thrilled to have him as always, and he kind of just took over. You're going to hear an interview where he's just ripping because he's so passionate about this topic of using plant medicines, not only for healing, but for vision quests. And this is something we've talked a little bit about here on Earth Ancients, but also on Destiny, the use of plant medicines, not only for aches and pains, but for vision quests. This is where you take ayahuasca and you meet various guides, what Native Americans would call animal helpers. And we're going to get into some really heavy stuff because I haven't used ayahuasca. I'm thinking about it at some point. One of the things in the United States is there's ayahuasca groups. There's one on the East Coast. There's a couple out here in California and in the Midwest as well. You know, I mean, they're bringing back these barks and these leaves to make the ayahuasca brew. I am more towards the thinking of Graham, which is you go to the source and you work with a reputable shaman who can watch over you. And these ayahuasca guerreros, I think that's what they call them, ayahuasca shaman, they have been taking ayahuasca for, you know, years, and they can watch over each individual to see how they're reacting to it, how they're doing. And I got to tell you, from all indications, it's not very pleasant when you take ayahuasca. There is a lot of vomiting, a lot of diarrhea. And when I hear that kind of stuff, I'm like, okay, that's, you have to be in the right state of mind. But the outcome of these ayahuasca vision quests are fascinating. And as Graham will explain in our interview today, you actually meet with another dimension where there's a whole different world waiting. And it's almost like they know when you're shifting from normal consciousness into these altered states of consciousness. And we've heard it from a number of people on Destiny that these beings are aware of us. And what makes it even more fascinating is that a lot of psychologists, a lot of psychiatrists in the orthodoxy believe this is just a shift of our own consciousness. Well, as we'll hear today, this is a shift to a different dimension, an actual dimension. It's not our own brain that's manufacturing these trips, these altered states, these other worlds. It is another dimension welcoming these individuals to their reality, to their dimension, to their world. And, you know, one of the things that Graham brings up today, and I question him about this, is that a good portion of his book is dedicated to those people who have UFO experiences, which can be abductions, can be walking up to a spacecraft and being welcomed by the beings. And then within the abduction experience, there are experiments, there are painful procedures that are performed on men and women. And, you know, Graham says that a lot of this could be triggered by, he says they can be triggered by brain chemistry. And he's going to tell, he gives you the reasons today. But I question that because I have studied and read and had people like John Mack, Bud Hopkins, David Jacobs, and so on at conferences and heard them firsthand regress people, hypnotically regress people, and hear their terrifying accounts of interacting with beings, being experimented on. And Graham has a different opinion of this. So I was like, okay. This is a really fun interview today. And again, I just let him rip. I asked very few questions. He's so passionate about the contents of this book. And it's been re-released. And it just came out. And also, he narrates this. So if you're not familiar with Graham Hancock's books, usually they're tomes. They're 400-500 plus pages. And I don't have time to read. I simply just don't have time to read. I have people that read and give me notes on some books. I typically have the book and I'll get through part of it. But when you're reading a Graham Hancock book, it's not a few days. It's not a few weeks. For me, it would take forever. So thankfully, he just finished the Audible, the narrated version of the book, which I was able to take, and I got into about 80% of it. And I really urge you to consider this, because it's not only is he a pleasure to listen to, he's really a good narrator. And he was telling me before we started that, because I just finished narrating my book, Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men, it was very challenging for me, because I kept wanting to edit and add words and stuff like that. You can't do that. You have to just go with what you have. But in his case, he's been doing it, and he's going through all his earlier books, and I think he wants to narrate them. But this new book, Visionary, it took him 9 days of being in the studio and narrating it. And it's really great to listen to. And I think it's $12 or $14, I am becoming a real fan of Audible, because, boy, you can listen to it in your car. You can go out and hike and have your headphones on and listen to it. You can listen to it at home when you have a moment. You know, and if you're commuting, it's perfect. If you're on a train, if you're driving, whatever, it's really a great way to hear the author narrating his work. So I urge you to consider getting this new book, Visionary, with Graham Hancock via Audible. So here's today's program with Graham Hancock, his new book, Visionary, The Mysterious Origins of Human Consciousness.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Thank you.
It's always great to have Graham Hancock with us. And Graham is introducing a new book. He actually mentioned it to us recently in a promotion. I actually posted this information on our Facebook page. The re-release of the book, actually, the original book was Supernatural Meetings with the Ancient Teachers of Mankind. This new book that we're talking about today is called Visionary, The Mysterious Origins of Human Consciousness. First of all, Graham, welcome to Earth Ancients. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Cliff. Good to be back with you.
Excellent. Hey, the big question we always have is why rewrite the bulk of the book? But you didn't rewrite the bulk of it.
No, I've not rewritten the bulk of the book. Supernatural, which was the original title of the book, was published in 2005. I don't wish to pat myself on the back too much, but it was a book that was far ahead of its time. At that time, psychedelics were still demonized. The recognition of the therapeutic aspects of psychedelics was not there. There were a lot of misunderstandings about psychedelics and the book because of the war on drugs and the intense hostility against psychedelics that has been ideologically generated. The book didn't have the impact that most of my books do. In other words, what's Hancock doing writing about psychedelics? Well, actually, there were very good reasons why I was writing about psychedelics. But what's happened since 2005, what are we now, 15, 17 years later, is that there have been hugely significant developments which make the book much more relevant today than it was in 2005. But at the same time, those hugely significant developments made it necessary for me to update the text of Supernatural. Not the main body of the text, but there are two specific factors. First of all, in Supernatural, I bought into the mainstream narrative about the Neanderthals and that the Neanderthals were supposedly incapable of creative and symbolic thought. Mm-hmm. That was an incorrect position. And one of the reasons I've reissued this book with a new detailed introduction is to put matters straight regarding the Neanderthals, because we now know much more about the Neanderthals than we knew back in 2005. And in particular, we know that the Neanderthals were capable of creating art, and that art, which was not recognized in 2005, and that art contains the same hallmarks as the rock and cave art from all around the world that was done by anatomically modern humans. And rather than anatomically modern humans kind of teaching stuff to Neanderthals, it looks like it was the other way around. It looks like we learned from our Neanderthal cousins, mm-hmm. who had been the dominant human presence in the world for hundreds of thousands of years before anatomically modern humans emerged. So I wanted to put the record straight. I wanted to update the reader and the listener on the new developments in our understanding of the Neanderthals. I wanted to correct an error that I made in the original book. My position with books is that I like to leave the original text exactly as it is when I do an update, and then I do the update in an introduction, and in this case, in an afterword, because there's a second element that changed a lot since 2005. First, the change of how we look at the Neanderthals, and secondly, mm-hmm. the way that psychedelics are received and understood in our society.
Okay, so now you open the book talking about the Neanderthals and their misinterpretations, but I don't remember seeing anything new in the new book regarding any new data.
There's a whole new chapter at the front of the new book which updates the reader and the listener, and I emphasize the listener because this is the other reason why I've done this. The original edition of Supernatural was narrated by a third party. And I have discovered that my readers do not like my books being narrated by third parties. They prefer them to be narrated by me. And I wanted to put that right as well. So it was necessary to go through a complicated process of getting rights back and then to create this revised version of the book, which has an extensive new introduction and an extensive new afterword, updating A on Neanderthals, B on psychedelics, and then narrate the book myself as an audiobook, an audible book that people can access and listen to. And these days, listening to books has become in many ways more important than reading books. It's one of the changes It's one of the changes in our culture.
Yeah.
A book can be listened to anywhere, but it can't be read anywhere. Right. And people on long journeys, people wishing to pass the time, an audio book is a good way to do that. So I wanted for my readers and my listeners to narrate this book myself, and at the same time to correct the two errors. Well, the fact of the matter was that back in 2005, the therapeutic and healing potential of psychedelics was not recognized in a way that it is today. So I've updated that, and I've updated the issue of the Neanderthals. But otherwise, the existing core body of the text remains exactly the same. But there is one other thing. In the US edition, the paperback edition, which is the edition that most people accessed, had been abridged by the publishers. They had actually cut out 8 chapters from the book, which were 8 chapters on the mystery of Stone Age art, the cave art of the Upper Paleolithic, and the incredible imagery of that art. They'd cut that down and had me boil it down into a single chapter, and I always felt bruised about that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take the opportunity. I felt that the publishers at that time underestimated the potential of readers and listeners to get engaged with detailed material. I wanted to restore those 8 chapters. So this is the full, final, definitive edition of Supernatural. At the same time, I've retitled it Visionary because although the reality of the supernatural is one of the possibilities that I explore in this book, there are other possibilities as well. And I felt that Supernatural rather limited the scope of the book in the title, whereas it's better to talk about visionary because this is really about visionary experiences and their role in the human story. And the question of what those experiences actually are, still most mainstream scientists, particularly those who are committed like Richard Dawkins, for example, to the reductionist materialist point of view, would regard all visionary experiences as just our brain on drugs, you know, just a sort of accidental, meaningless byproduct of disturbed brain chemistry. And I am certain from my own extensive experience with psychedelics and also from detailed research on this subject, that is not the case. There is something very mysterious going on here.
Yeah.
And what that mysterious thing is, it requires us to reassess our attitude to the nature of reality and what reality is. Here's the first mystery. If you go back to the caves of, say, Upper Paleolithic Europe, 40-odd thousand years ago, you find this incredible art, which depicts very frequently, it depicts entities. And those entities are often part animal and part human in form. There's a technical term for them, which is therianthrope. And that's from the Greek therion, which means wild beast, and anthropos, which means man. So these are combinations of beasts and humans. It might be a lion head combined with a human body. It might be an eland body combined with a human head. All kinds of possibilities. Now, here's the interesting thing. Accompanying those images of therianthropes are also found geometrical patterns, very distinct kinds of geometrical patterns. And what I discovered when I began to research this book is that in the Amazon rainforest, people drinking the powerful psychedelic brew ayahuasca, shamans drinking ayahuasca, after they've drunk the ayahuasca and returned to the normal everyday state of consciousness, they remember their visions and they paint them. And what really gave me the spark for this book is the fact that those paintings done by shamans in the Amazon today are absolutely identical with the paintings that were being done in Upper Paleolithic Europe 40,000 years ago. Now, obviously, shamans in the Amazon and Upper Paleolithic Europeans 40,000 years ago were not comparing notes. Why are they depicting the same imagery? And why are reports of experiences in altered states of consciousness so shared and so common all around the world? Now, I think that we have to consider the possibility that the brain is not a generator of consciousness. It doesn't make consciousness. It's a receiver of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Consciousness transitions through the brain. I think of our bodies as vehicles that are used by our consciousness. But in order to engage with the physical reality of the everyday world and the stresses and strains of just making a living and feeding our families and getting through daily life, we become very focused on this level of reality. And it's difficult for our brains to detach from that and connect with perhaps other areas of reality that are equally real, but normally inaccessible to our senses. Mm-hmm. And what the line that I'm pursuing in visionary is that in altered states of consciousness, the receiver wavelength of the brain is altered, and we gain access to other sectors of reality that are normally closed off to us. And because they're real, they are depicted 40,000 years ago and today. That reality has not changed, and the means for us to enter that reality has not changed. We must alter our state of consciousness. If we're locked into the material world of the 21st century, we are not going to see beyond that level of reality. And there's very good survival reasons why we shouldn't, you know. You have to engage with this level of reality in order to function with it. But for it to become the monopoly state of consciousness, where that's all our consciousness is allowed to do. And remember that even today, psychedelics are still highly illegal. Our society doesn't want us to engage with other sectors of reality, with those other experiences. But we do need to get into altered states of consciousness if we're going to engage with that other reality. And psychedelics are not the only way to do it. Very experienced meditators can do it. Starving yourself for 3 weeks will do it. Austerities will a visionary state very, very, very quickly. Pain can do it. The Native American Sundance, for example. There are. It's as though nature has taken a belt and braces approach to our need to access altered states of consciousness. And I believe our society is making a terrible mistake by shutting down or seeking to shut down our access to altered states of consciousness, because the evidence is, and I need to pay tribute to the late, great Terence McKenna here.
Oh, yeah.
And his wonderful book, Food of the Gods.
Yep.
The evidence is, and this, Terence was one of the first to really connect to this, but the evidence is compelling that our ancestors' access to altered states of consciousness, probably initially accidentally by eating an interesting looking mushroom and then finding that there were extraordinary experiences unleashed as a result, that our ancestors' access to altered states of consciousness may have been what ushered in the modern world, that we would not have become what we are. There's a step forward in the whole human story. So we go for hundreds of thousands of years not seeming to do very much. And then at the very moment that we start painting this incredible visionary art, we become fully modern humans, and our capacity to function and work in the world changes dramatically. And it's just unfortunate that there's been a backlash against this, that people have been fearful of these instances, that they've shut them down and they've surrounded them with all kind of lies and propaganda. But fundamentally, these substances are nurturing and healing. And I'm glad that modern medicine, and again, I've updated this in the book, I'm glad that modern medicine is catching up with this and recognizing, quite apart from our understanding of reality, that people who suffer from severe depression, for example, or post-traumatic stress disorder can get healing from psychedelics, particularly from psilocybin, in ways that they cannot get healing from any of the major pharmaceutical products that are supposed to deal with these matters. So there's really a revolution in our understanding going on. And I felt it was time to re-release Supernatural under the new title of Visionary, with new material to update the book, so that readers with the mindset of 2022 and onwards can engage with the material that I presented in that book. The book indeed starts with Stone Age art. Well, yeah. It starts first of all with my, see, I'm a boots on the ground researcher.
And this is what's so fascinating to me, is that here you are taking ayahuasca, you're flying to Peru, you're with the shaman, you're vomiting, you're retching, but your experiential trip is very rewarding in some ways, isn't it?
Very, very rewarding, and it taught me that reality is much more complicated than we imagine. We're told that reality is a certain thing by science, but actually it's multi-layered and goes down into huge depths and distances. It's important for us to be able to engage with those levels of reality. Now, so the fundamental mystery is that across time and across cultures, between cultures that have had no contact with each other, whether they're separated by tens of thousands of years or tens of thousands of miles, people are having the same experiences in deeply altered states of consciousness brought on by psychedelics. And the question is, how do we explain that? It's the other odd thing is that these psychedelic experiences are very often interpreted as teaching experiences, that the individual learns something from the experience, learns something about themselves, learns something about the nature of reality. If we're carrying any heavy baggage in our lives, if we've been cruel or hurtful to others, you can absolutely be guaranteed that that is going to come up in a psychedelic session, and you are going to have to deal with it. Instead of hiding it away in a corner of your mind and pretending it didn't happen, it confronts you face on. And in that way, it gives you the opportunity to become a better person. It doesn't make you a better person. That choice is up to you, but it shows you the reality and it allows you to engage with that. And as a result, many people experience Mother Ayahuasca, as she's referred to in the Amazon, as a teacher, that she comes to teach us to be better people and to function better in the world. I think that this is an important part of the mystery. What is actually going on here? Now, one explanation, and it's the explanation I prefer, is that we are interfacing in altered states of consciousness with what are indeed veridical other levels of reality that are normally not accessible to our consciousness, where information that we did not have before is provided to us, new information. Let me give you an example of that. I hadn't written a novel before I drank ayahuasca, but under the influence of ayahuasca in Brazil some years ago, I was given the whole plot and story of a novel. A novel that I eventually wrote and that became, and that's titled Entangled. I'm not saying it's a great novel or anything like that, but it introduced me to a new part of myself. Yeah. That I found there was a storytelling ability in me. I'd previously been confined totally to nonfiction, and suddenly I found myself able to envisage a novel, a fiction story. This was novelty for me. I found something new as a result of that experience. And I think that this is the case with many people. Now, I interpret that as I engaged with another level of reality. I found a wonderful teacher there, Mother Ayahuasca, and she taught me something about myself that I didn't know. Yeah. But another interpretation, which I also explore in the book, why is it that people have these universal experiences in altered states of consciousness? Why do they meet the same entities? Why do they have the same lessons taught to them? Another possibility is that this information is in some way written on our DNA, that it's hardwired into us. And that, again, because of the state of the society we live in, we're not normally able to access that area of information on our DNA. But in altered states of consciousness, we can do so. And this seems to be very far from visionary experiences. But one of the things I go into in the book is the work of Francis Crick, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the double helix structure of DNA. And Francis Crick, not many people know this. In fact, many people would be stunned to hear this because he's regarded as a sort of ultimate materialist scientist. But Francis Crick did not believe that DNA had evolved on this planet.
Yeah.
This is the master of DNA. This is the man who won the Nobel Prize for his study of DNA. And he came out, quite frankly, in a book published in 1981 called Life Itself, and said he believed it was impossible that the DNA-RNA system evolved on this planet in the time available for it to do so before life emerged. He regarded it as completely impossible, and he proposed, you know, what many would think of as a completely crazy theory. It sounds like a theory that people who've experienced UFOs would propose. But what he proposed was I'm going to simplify this, but what Francis Crick proposed, and remember, this is Crick, not Hancock, proposing this. What he proposed was that the universe is 13.9 billion years old, maybe older than that. There's been time in faraway distant star systems for people to, I'm not going to say people, for beings to evolve a very high level of consciousness and very high technology. So he envisaged a planet revolving around a star in a very distant part of the galaxy with a highly advanced civilization on that planet. And then the residents of the planet, the scientists of the planet, discovered that they faced certain annihilation. Perhaps there was going to be a supernova that would go off in their vicinity and just strip all life from their planet. Well, their first project would be to see, can we get ourselves off this planet? And relocate our civilization elsewhere. But again, this is Crick's hypothesis. They discovered that the distances in interstellar space are too great to get these big, highly evolved bodies across light years of space. But what you can do is you can send bacteria across space. You can put them in cryogenic chambers. You can freeze them. You can send them across space. And before you do that, you can genetically engineer them. So he proposed that this civilization far away on another corner of the galaxy that discovered it was going to be wiped out by a supernova, that what it did was it genetically engineered bacteria. It packed them into cryogenic chambers on spaceships, and it sent them out in all directions into the early universe, in the hope that perhaps one or two of those ships would crash into a planet that might be suitable for the evolution of life.
You're talking about panspermia.
It's what Crick called directed panspermia.
Right.
There's two kinds of panspermia. There's the panspermia that has been suggested by Chandra Wickramasinghe and others, which is the notion that the seeds of life are carried on comets.
Right.
Randomly and accidentally. I'm not against that. I think that's a very interesting idea. But Crick took it a step further, and he proposed directed panspermia, that this was a deliberate attempt to seed life on other planets, and that it was done so with the very most primitive forms of life, knowing that in the right circumstances, evolution would occur. And what Crick suggested, to cut a long story short, was that 3.9 billion years ago, about 600 million years after this planet had formed, and when it was just at the point where it was becoming hospitable to life, because the first 500 or 600 million years it was too hot, mm-hmm. but about 3.9 billion years ago, one of those spaceships from that distant civilization in the galaxy crashed on planet Earth, spilled out its contents of bacteria, and they spread around the Earth and began to evolve. And this is one of the mysteries, is the way life suddenly appears on planet Earth 3.9 billion years. It's not sophisticated life. It's very primitive, very simple, very hardy form of life. But it emerges on this planet, and it sets in motion the process of evolution.
Yeah, and you talk a great deal about the supercode in DNA. The data that is stored in DNA is not really well known, and this could be our evolution is based in all that.
Well, this is again a discovery that's really only been made relatively recently. I mean, we're always looking in our computer dominated world. We're always looking for the next method of data storage. How can we restore? How can we store enormous amounts of data? And it turns out that DNA is just about the very best storage mechanism for data that you can find. And we're going to have DNA computers before too long, because it's a fantastic storage mechanism. You can write the entire works of Shakespeare in DNA. It's an amazing storage device. And so Crick's suggestion was that this was how life reached planet Earth. It came in the form of bacteria, but those bacteria had been genetically engineered. And there are elements in the DNA code in human beings today that are highly conserved and that go right back to the origins of life. And the alternative suggestion to parallel realities that we can only encounter in altered states of consciousness is that there's an entire library of data written on our DNA that we don't normally have access to. But in an altered state of consciousness, we can gain access to that information, and it can revolutionize us. It can change us completely. And it's fascinating, really, how many really important scientific discoveries come from experiences in altered states of consciousness.
Yeah, it's amazing, totally, scientific research and things. I'm curious to know, I knew Terrence McKenna, I had him on a number of programs here in San Francisco. He talks about this shift in ayahuasca of meeting these beings who are aware of us. And it's almost like they are giving us knowledge if we will accept it, or opening us and data dumping at that point of view in these altered states with new information. Do you think this is a form of potential evolution for us?
Oh, yes, I do. I think that the war on drugs and the demonization of psychedelics has mm-hmm. held back the evolution of human consciousness in a very dangerous way, at a time when we desperately need consciousness to evolve. Certain demonic forces in our society have sought to shut down the evolution of consciousness and keep it locked in a particular frame. And consciousness is the whole issue for human beings. We are aware that we live in a dangerous world where people are behaving in a crazy way towards one another, full of violence and harm and hatred and fear and suspicion, all the wrong emotions. Only a consciousness shift will solve that. Passing laws, governments doing stuff, governments saying you must do this or you must do that, it's not going to work. It's not going to change anything. The only thing that's going to change human beings is ourselves and our state of consciousness changing and developing. And in that project, I'm not saying that psychedelics are the only resource, but they're one of the resources, one of the assets that are available to us to upgrade and elevate human consciousness. Now, I don't want to come across as somebody who's just kind of, I hate actually using the word drugs. It's a word that is so misused.
Plant medicines.
I prefer to call them plant medicines. Our society calls them drugs. It's important to realize that all is not sweetness and light in the ayahuasca garden, that things can go radically wrong. That I would not recommend anybody who suffers from schizophrenia, for example, to undertake an ayahuasca journey. Chances are it can make it worse.
Yeah.
It's possible that some schizophrenics are closer to that altered state already than you know everyday people. The caution needs to be exercised. This is why ancient civilizations have so much to teach us. If we look at virtually every ancient civilization, whether it's the ancient Egyptians, whether it's the ancient Greeks, whether it's the ancient Sumerians, the evidence is compelling, and I present it in Visionary. The evidence is compelling that they made use of psychedelics. There's no doubt. If you look at ancient Egyptian art, it has astonishing amounts in common with the art of the Upper Paleolithic in Europe. What is Anubis, if not a therianthrope? He's a deity who has the head of a dog and the body of a human being. What is Horus, if not a therianthrope? He has the head of a hawk and the body of a human being. Again and again, Thoth, the god of wisdom, has the head of an ibis and the body of a human being. These are classic visionary experiences. We do not in every day-to-day life, when we're getting in our car and driving to work, we do not see things like that. Or if we do, we're going to have a problem driving. But you need to be in an altered state of consciousness in order to see them. And this is where ancient civilizations have much to teach us, because our society we're like children in the psychedelic garden. We don't know how to use psychedelics. It's very important that we sit at the feet of shamans in hunter-gatherer societies and learn from them how they control the psychedelic space, how they make it a safe place where people can have nurturing and useful and beneficial experiences rather than terrifying and hideous experiences that may harm them in some way. So I'm not saying just everybody go out there and take psychedelics and your world is going to get much better, because that's not the case. But if you're going to take psychedelics, take them in a circumstance where you're working with somebody, with a facilitator who knows exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And who understands these medicines perfectly. If you do that, mm-hmm. then the experience is likely to be much more beneficial to you than it would be in other ways.
We're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back with Graham Hancock talking about his new book, Visionary. I'm speaking with Graham Hancock, who is introducing the re-release of a new book called Visionary, describing his own personal journeys with plant medicines, specifically DMT and ayahuasca, but also the importance of these plant medicines in our evolution. What does the cave art tell us, these shamanistic journeys that are on these cave paintings in Europe and in Africa that you highlight so in-depthly in the book? What are they, how do they speak to us today?
Well, what they first of all coincide with, and again, Terence McKenna was onto this almost before anybody else. One of the things I do in this book is bring in all the scientific research that supports Terence McKenna's point of view in Food of the Gods. One thing that's very clear is that there is a step change in the way that human beings relate to the world when the first evidence becomes available that they were using psychedelics. And that first evidence is in the cave art that we find all around the world, in some cases going back 70 or 80,000 years. Human beings start functioning differently. They've been locked in a rigid pattern of behavior for hundreds of thousands of years. They've kept on doing the same thing again and again and again without any change, without any innovation. And then suddenly, and it feels like almost overnight, it's as though a light goes on in the human brain. And our ancestors become creative. They become innovators. They start thinking outside the box. They start doing things in different ways. And what that says to me, once we set the psychedelics in context of the long story of the evolution of human consciousness, is that there was a shift change in human consciousness at that time, and that it brought the human race forward into a whole new range of possibilities. And that is precisely what I think we're denying ourselves now. Mm-hmm. We're denying ourselves access to that whole new range of possibilities. That's why I welcome the medical research, which is now going on, which is absolute. Look, I've got a copy of Harvard Law Journal here. And in it, on page 16, reassessing psychedelics. They're looking at a new legal framework for psychedelics, because it can't be denied anymore. Psychedelics are incredibly nurturing and helpful.
Well, here in California, they're experimenting with microdosing. There's engineers in San Jose, and there's groups that are using microdoses of these psychedelics for brain enhancement.
Yes.
So I don't know if it's not quite legal yet, but if they were to make it legal, I think it would usher in some very wonderful times, I think.
Well, yes, I think there's no doubt that it would, and it's good that the scientific establishment is coming up with it. Now, in our society, again, because our level of consciousness is quite low, we somehow need the permission of science in order to explore and investigate. If science says it's okay, then people will go for it. If science says it's not okay, then only those out on the fringe will go for it. To get this into the mainstream, just the way our society functions, we need science to say it's okay. And science is doing that now. Science is saying it's okay. And it will be, and not only that it's okay, that it's healing people from terrible suffering. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a horrible condition to deal with. It destroys lives.
Yeah.
There's absolute compelling evidence. Major universities, Imperial College in London, for example, compelling evidence that psychedelics can be used to heal conditions like PTSD and depression. And once that's recognized by science, how long can the legislators really hold back legalization? Before they're seen as actually harmful themselves, the legislators are harmful, imposing harmful legislation. And anyway, you know, this is something I feel very strongly about. It's another mistake our society has made. You and I are adults. Adults should be allowed. We should not need the permission of government to make decisions about our own health, our own bodies, and our own consciousness. I've said this many times, but if we don't have the freedom of sovereignty over our own consciousness, then we're not free in any way. There's no such thing as freedom if we don't have freedom of consciousness. It's the most Orwellian control system, where a government says to you, you cannot have these experiences. Even if you do no harm to others and would never do any harm to others, we say you can't have these experiences. That's not right. That is making adults into children. These medicines are for adults. They're not for children. I maintain that very strongly, but we're much more likely to keep them out of the hands of children in a legal framework that ensures that they are properly protected and preserved, and also that the quality of the substance is good. Mm-hmm. This is the other thing with the illegal market, is people are buying something that they think is one thing and it turns out to be another thing. The whole war on drugs has been a nightmare of stupidity and cruelty and viciousness. And it's time that was set behind us. And that's one of the reasons I'm very happy to re, re, release Supernatural under the title of Visionary Now, is that that it will give people access to an enormous. I did 5 years of research on this book, an enormous body of information which looks at all sides of the argument, and the role that psychedelics have played in societies all around the world.
Mm-hmm. You make a profound statement, Graham, in the book that this abduction phenomenon that has been going on for decades could be altered states of consciousness. I want you to explain this in a little bit more detail. John Mack did a worldwide survey in his book Abductions. He went to Africa. He went to Europe. He sampled people who have had this experience from around the world. And some had very good experiences. Some had very traumatic experiences. But in each case that he recorded, they were actually physically taken either on a ship, meeting aliens, so forth and so on. Discuss how you believe that some people have this ability to shift their consciousness and experience altered states and perhaps believe they're facing aliens, but they're actually not.
Oh, they may well be facing aliens. But I would say that it's more likely to be entities from parallel dimensions than I think that's another mistake that we make. The UFO phenomenon is real. This is not this is no joke. This is a real phenomenon. I don't want to minimize it or trivialize it. I don't happen to need alien visitors to explain how the Great Pyramid got built. I believe that human beings were perfectly capable of that. A lost civilization fills in all the anomalies there. Sorry, where was it? Just remind me where I was there for a second.
We're talking about actual alien interactions, UFOlogy, and altered states of consciousness.
Here's the thing, Cliff. The most powerful psychedelic known to science is dimethyltryptamine, DMT.
DMT.
DMT is the active ingredient of ayahuasca. But DMT is often accessed by people in the West by smoking it. As a matter of fact, you can't have a DMT experience if you take it as an edible. If you eat it because of the enzyme monoamine oxidase in our gut that switches off DMT on contact. One of the brilliant things that's happened in the Amazon, and I think it was the ancient teachers of mankind who brought this knowledge to our ancestors, is that they learned to mix leaves containing DMT with the ayahuasca vine, which contains a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, thus producing an orally active form of DMT. The interesting thing about which results in a journey that can last 5 or 6 hours sometimes instead of like 10 minutes, which is what a smoked DMT trip does. So the interesting thing is that DMT is a natural brain hormone. We all have it in our bodies, usually in sub-psychedelic quantities. Is it possible that some people just naturally generate more DMT than others and plunge into a deeply altered state of consciousness? And I really want to emphasize this, where the experiences they have are absolutely real, but not real at this level of reality. They're not physical reality. It's another level of reality. It's another step change in reality. And I think the notion of spontaneous overproduction of DMT helps to explain a large number of alien contact experiences. And as a matter of fact, Rick Strassman at the University of New Mexico, with the pioneering work that he did with human volunteers and dimethyltryptamine back in the 90s, makes this absolutely clear that it's almost there's almost no division, no separation at all between the experiences of his volunteers and the experiences of UFO abductees. They were having exactly the same experiences, down to objects being inserted into their bodies, crystals being put in their brain, surgery being conducted. All of these things are unleashed by DMT. So it's difficult to hear somebody who's had a UFO abduction experience when we're aware of Rick Strassman's work and just rule out the possibility that DMT is involved in it in some way. It certainly is involved in it. As a matter of fact, the new scientific research that's going on isn't only going on into the therapeutic implications of psychedelics. There's a new study at Imperial College London now involving dozens of volunteers. It's quite hush-hush. They've admitted that it's going on, but the results are not being widely released. I happen to know one of those volunteers personally. And this is called DMTX. They found an extended way to release DMT directly into the body. If you drink ayahuasca, you've got all kinds of troubling physical symptoms. You're going to have diarrhea. You're going to vomit. It does kind of get in the way of the experience. But in Imperial College, they're giving people intravenous DMT, and they're keeping them in the DMT state for more than an hour. And those people are coming back and reporting astonishingly similar experiences, encountering the same entities who are saying the same kind of things to them. It's the first time that science is really using a psychedelic to explore the nature of reality. All of these things become possible in a world that is more forgiving towards psychedelics. Another thing I want to be, a couple of points I want to make, remind me if I forget, because I want to talk about fairies and elves.
Yeah, okay.
and maybe I'll just talk about fairies and elves now. And forgive me, listeners, if I sound a bit dazed, but I've been traveling for weeks and I'm just absolutely wiped out. But one of the things I look at in is the mysterious phenomenon largely of the Middle Ages that was called fairies. The mysterious phenomenon found amongst tribal and hunter-gatherer societies called spirits, which shamans have contact with. And the mysterious phenomenon in our society today called alien contact and alien abductions. Mm-hmm. What I'm suggesting is that we are applying our particular cultural framework to a universal human experience. In the Middle Ages, that was interpreted as fairies and elves. What did fairies and elves do? They abducted human beings, just as aliens do in the modern world. They conducted surgery on human beings. They had sex with human beings. There were hybrid fairy human children, just as there are hybrid alien human children today. And it's the same with spirits in shamanic and hunter-gatherer cultures, that they all do the same things. If you actually look at what these entities do rather than what they're called, you find they all do the same thing. And that makes me more and more certain that we're dealing with a truly universal experience, which is a deep mystery and which needs to be explained. We called them fairies in the Middle Ages. They call them spirits in the Amazon rainforest. We call them aliens. But whatever they are, they're all the same thing. And they've been interacting with the human race for tens of thousands of years. And they played a hugely important part in stepping us forward into a new range of possibilities. The other thing I want to make clear, at a tangent before I forget, the other thing I want to make clear is, I'd said this earlier, psychedelics are not a magic bullet. Nobody should imagine that if they take a psychedelic, they're suddenly going to become enlightened. No, that is not the case. The real work with psychedelics happens after the psychedelic journey. It's what you do with the lessons that you get. It's how you integrate those lessons into your life. It's the changes that you make in your life. And that is the real work. It's easy enough to take a psychedelic, although you may have a very tough journey, but actually changing your behavior, getting over a lifetime of bad habits, becoming a more nurturing and more positive person rather than a negative and conflictual person, that's work. And so the work is what's important. It's what you do with the experience after it that's every bit as important as the experience itself.
Hmm. You talk about Dr. Rick Strassman's studies, and towards the end of his research, when his subjects were reporting back that there were entities telling him or telling them about their dimension and things like that, he was kind of freaking out. Is there a knowledge that at some point you think we could record from these beings that could be placed in a book or something that would give us guidance?
Yeah, I think there is. And that's why I think the work that's being done at Imperial College is so important. You know, again, it's part of the materialist framework of our society that we regard all exploration as physical. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of talk about exploring planets in the solar system, putting colonies on Mars, things like that. Let's explore our own inner worlds first. Let's get that done first. And let's use the gifts, the assets that nature has given us in the form of psychedelics to do that. This is the most important form of exploration that we can do to find out who we really are and what this extraordinary thing called life is really all about. We're not going to find that if we go and put a colony on Mars, but we might find it if we use psychedelics in a targeted, studied, careful way to explore the nature of reality. And we might find that we're in contact with, or potentially in contact with, a much wider reality than we imagine to be the case. And all that's necessary perhaps is for us to become ready to encounter that level of reality. And that brings me back again to the issue of consciousness change, which is the thing that is most needed by human beings today. We have to step out of the old rigid patterns of thought that have held us locked in wars and conflict and hatred for the last couple of thousand years. We have to step out of that framework and enter a new framework that allows human potential to be fully realized. And I think psychedelics have a very important role to play in that. I don't claim in Visionary to have solved the problem. What I'm trying to do in this book is to put all the information in front of the reader or in front of the listener so that they can use that information to make up their own minds. Another matter that I go into, which many years later, my good friend Brian Mirarescu went into further with his recent book, The Immortality Key, which I wrote the foreword for, is the origins of religions are very much connected to psychedelic experiences. There's no doubt that the early Christians, before Christianity pulled on the jackboot of the Roman state and became this domineering faith called Roman Catholicism that was burning people at the stake from the very earliest days, before that, in the first 300 to 400 years of Christianity, it was dominated by another form of Christianity called Gnosticism. And there's no doubt that the Gnostics, who believe that we're here to learn and to grow and to develop, that our project here is knowledge, there's no doubt that they were using psychedelics, specifically psychedelic mushrooms. I go into that in great detail. I go into the mystery of Eleusis in Greece, and the extraordinary experiences that people had there. They would go into this underground galleries, they would drink a brew, and then they would have life-changing experiences. And some of the great philosophers of the past, Plato, Sophocles, they were all initiates in the Eleusinian mysteries. So I try to cover all the bases in this book and to bring from the Stone Age to the Space Age, these experiences have been part of the human story, and we have not given them the credit that they deserve. The other important point, again, I would like to make with psychedelics, they're not a magic bullet. The work begins after the experience. If you're going to have a psychedelic experience, have it in a setting with people who know what they're doing. This is not a party toy. This is deep work on the nature of personality. And above all else, make sure your intention is right.
Exactly.
The intention, you bring the right intention to the project, and you may find yourself in a place where you learn enormous things about yourself that you did not know, and ways to make your life better. So intention is really, really vital part of it too.
You don't say it in specific words, but it feels to me that you, on some level, think there's overseers that are perhaps guiding us in a certain way. You know, here we have panspermia. I mean, Wick Ramsey's been on this program before. He doesn't say it specifically that there are aliens sending molecules or microbes to Earth.
Yeah.
But who else would be doing this?
Well, yeah. Either nature itself is much more mysterious than we think. But let's not forget, intelligent beings are part of nature too. Mm-hmm. I think Crick's idea of directed panspermia makes a great deal of sense. The origins of life on Earth are very mysterious. This sudden appearance of life and its sudden spread all over the planet is very, very odd. And then the process of evolution kicking in. It's something we don't understand properly. So are there overseers? I come down to these two options. One is, in altered states of consciousness, we are engaging with absolutely real, freestanding other levels of reality, vibrating at a different rate to the vibration of this level of reality. Mm-hmm. That's one explanation for these mysterious universal experiences. And that in that other level of reality, there are entities who are aware of us, even if we're not aware of them. And we're a kind of project for them. They want to bring on the human race in some way. Look, I mean, a highly intelligent species dominating a planet, that may be very rare in the universe. We don't know how rare life is or is not. Maybe life is everywhere, but does it always reach the kind of level that we've reached? If evolution has produced such a species, then those overseers would want to make sure it went in the right direction. And maybe that's what's going on. The other notion is that the experiences unleashed in altered states of consciousness were always there. They're always written on our DNA, awaiting a time when we could make use of them. It may be that a crocodile can't make much use of an altered state of consciousness, but human beings certainly can. And we're here to do so. And suddenly, information that's been encoded on our DNA since the beginning of life on Earth becomes accessible to us and begins to make it possible for us to step out of rigid framework of thinking and step into a wider world. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not sure anybody will ever know in this generation or 100 generations from now. What I do know is it's a colossal mystery. And what I've tried to do in Visionary is to put all the elements of that mystery in front of my readers.
The book's called Visionary, The Mysterious Origins of Human Consciousness. This is Graham's latest book. And I have to tell you, I heard it via Audible, and it's much easier to consume with the oral presentation, and I personally appreciated it.
Well, thank you. I spent 9 days in the studio recording the narration for this book.
Was that in London, or were you in the States when you?
Well, I was in England. I live in the city of Bath, and it happens that 20 miles away there's a studio that does a lot of Audible recordings. So I was able to go there every day and sit. For 8 hours in the studio, then come home, go there. 9 solid days of recording. But I'm so glad that I did it. And I really don't like my books being narrated by third parties. Of my books, I've now narrated Fingerprints of the Gods. I've narrated Magicians of the Gods. I've narrated America before.
Okay.
And now I've narrated Visionary. As an author, as the author of the book, I know where to put the emphasis. I know which of my words I want to push forward and which I want to hold back, and a third party, with all due respect to that third party, can never do that. And also, I like the idea of audiobooks. It's almost going back to storytelling around the fire.
I agree. Yeah,
you know, this is something that's rooted into the ancestry of the human species. We tell stories to one another, and it's a relatively recent development that we put those stories in the written word, and thus created a gap between us and the storyteller. Mm-hmm. It's better for the storyteller to engage directly with the listener. And I do think that audiobooks are the thing of the future in this sense. And it makes me, as a writer, it makes me think again about how I should be writing books. If I'm writing a physical print book, which is full of diagrams and maybe 2,000 footnotes, you know, that's a whole apparatus of backup to the data, which you don't have in an audiobook. And so you have to think about how you express your information in
exactly.
And oddly enough, although it's a 21st century highly advanced technology, what we're actually going back to is storytelling around the fire, and that's what I love about it, and that's why I was willing to spend 9 days in the studio recording it.
It's amazing. As we conclude, why should people purchase this book or the audio tape, Graham? Why? Why is it important for this material to get out?
Because I think Visionary is the only book that gives the whole gamut of detail and background on the psychedelic mystery that literally goes from the origins of modern human consciousness to the world today, and presents detailed, solid evidence that those who are interested in this subject can then redeploy themselves in arguments, in discussions with others, in presentations. I just see this book as a step on the process. It's fundamentally about the reader or the listener and providing them with information that is useful to them in their own investigations into the mystery of being alive.
Excellent. All right. Hey, much success on this. I enjoyed it, and I think you listening will enjoy it as well. Great to see you as always, Graham.
Lovely to talk to you. Thanks for having me on the show. Keep well.
I said it from the beginning. I would need someone to hold my hand on an ayahuasca journey. And, I mean, I've done peyote and some other things, but nothing that takes your brain to that level. I grew up in the age of LSD when I was in junior high school. It came around and it was in like little buttons. They would put a drop of LSD on a candy button, and that's how you take it. You take a tab. I never did it though. A lot of my friends did. I was too crazy. I was afraid I was going to go crazy if I took a LSD. Yeah. So
that's just the idea of an ayahuasca journey is frightening, but there's also something about it that makes it wonderful in many ways, because we don't have a way to do this. We don't have a way to shift our consciousness without these powerful plant medicines. You know, I mean, for him to say that, for Graham to say that there are people that can shift into that area, that is a meditator who's been meditating intensely for decades, or, as he mentioned, somebody who has the ability to shift through some form of movement or thought process or something into those higher realms. That is somebody who's on a different scale, because to be able to do that without hallucinogens is pretty amazing. So anyhow, I hope you enjoyed that interview. Like I said in the beginning, he just kind of ripped. He just took off and he just ripped. So that was fun. Yeah. He's going to be back in the fall with a big announcement, by the way. And I can't tell you what the announcement is, but it's very big. So there you go, Graham Hancock. Hey, if you're enjoying Earth Ancients, please consider becoming a subscriber. For as little as $5 a month, you can support the work we do here on Earth Ancients, on Destiny, and the special edition, the archives that comes out of, you know, off and on a few times a month. You know, it really is a challenge to do these. Sometimes these programs take a lot of energy, a lot of resources. We love doing them, but, you know, it really helps if you could give us a hand and subscribe to Patreon, which is a support service that is really easy to use. You just give them your ATM and they take a few bucks out every month and it goes directly to the source, and it helps us pay the bills and keep things going. For more information, go to Patreon, patreon.com/Earth Ancients, and you'll see all the details. Hey, and we got a bunch of great gifts for you. We have tons of ebooks from many of the authors we have here on Earth Ancients, some from Destiny. You can download those books as our thank you. I think we're up to about 20 books, and we keep adding to those. You can also see unpublished interviews. There are some galleries, and occasionally I jump on and we kind of have a conversation about some current events and things like that. So please consider it. $5, $10, $15, even $20 a month helps us tremendously. For more information and to subscribe, go to patreon.com/Earth Ancients. Hey, we just launched a new series of t-shirts. You can go to earthancients.com, go to the products page. Our t-shirts are really cool. I have a world-class t-shirt artist from South America, and we have a really good Mesoamerican t-shirt. We call it the Pakal, because the face of Pakal, the Lord of the Maya, the Palenque king, he's on that t-shirt. We have an Egyptian t-shirt with Akhenaten. We have the early Earth Ancients t-shirts with our logo, and we have like six different t-shirts, and we keep adding to them. So check it out. Go to earthancients.com and click on the products section at the very top, and you'll see how to do it. The prices are really, really reasonable. I think you can get a t-shirt for under 20 bucks, and you'll love them. The designs are very, very cool, and it's something to wear proudly as you listen to the podcast each week. So check it out. Earth Ancients t-shirts. I love them. All right, that's it for this week. I want to thank my guest, Graham Hancock. It was great speaking with him, as always. And then our team of Ruth Thomas, Mark Foster, and all the others who edit and produce the content. You guys rock. I'm going to leave you with the music of Edgar Hoppe, who wrote this song, The Wonder of a Child. And we played a little bit of it as we started the interview, but I wanted to play a little more of it. It's a beautiful song. And it's a very inspirational song. Reminds me of my son. So I think you'll like it as well. All right. Take care. Be well. And we'll talk to you next week.